Hi, I'm Patrick Palm, and this is the Learn From Leaders podcast. In this show, I interview favorite customers and other interesting leaders in product development, marketing, HR, executive management, investors. You find favorite leaders in many different places and in organizations doing game development and publishing, software as a service and other tech companies and big enterprises, you know, going from very centralized, command and control kind of organizations to a more modern way of working with a culture, with high team autonomy, and better alignment towards the company goals and values. So let's go.
Ben, I guess you're seeing all the buzz around founder mode being started by that blog post, and there's been plenty of memes around that, but more importantly, I have been slightly frustrated actually by a lot of the commentary, which tends to gravitate someone down the lines of, oh, this is a much better way, which is in the middle, you know, and they kind of people automatically translate founder mode to basically micromanagement and manager mode to, being totally hands off and not, you know, engaging at all with the details, you know, of the work. And then, you know, you have all these YouTubers and podcasters and bloggers saying that, oh, you know, this is great, you know, in the middle road.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
And I think it's very unhelpful to leaders. I think it's a little bit of a misunderstanding of what's actually being said in the blog post, because, you know, I think he describes it very well and also being quite humble on saying that we don't fully understand what it really is, and, you know, more research is needed, and there's a lot of other things being said too. But what I would like to jump to is that I could jump straight to what I do think is, let's say, founder mode done right. But the reason I'm excited to discuss this with you is that I think the challenge, this kind of, you know, the autonomy of this whole conversation, I think has been applicable for game development leadership for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And since you've been very involved with that for a long time, I think you are in a fantastic position to have an opinion. And I'll be a little bit more specific what I mean. So let's say that, you know, I have for sure, you know, many times seen, if we start with very small studios where you have creative leaders that have a very strong vision and a very strong talent around what's going to be awesome, you know, what's going to be a great experience, you know, with the game. And they are making sure that nothing gets released that doesn't fully live up to their vision for that. And they are controlling that by absolutely, you know, micromanaging the shit out of it. And that could actually work quite okay in a very small team. And then that team becomes successful and it becomes bigger. And then they have a policy that person needs to sign off basically everything, which simply doesn't work because of volume. So they actually have that policy, and the team is basically, you know, finding a lot of ways to work around that to get anything done, which is, you know, obviously a bit of a suboptimal way to do it. The organizations where I've seen this done well, and obviously this is very much in the context of how you set up workflows in Favro, because Favro is a very, you know, workflow-oriented tool where you kind of go from your traditional, you know, piles of tickets or, you know, Jira, you know, tickets in Jira, making you very siloed, you know, to simply having, you know, one asset that will go through an art pipeline that actually consists of several workflows. And then when we look at, okay, so how do you set up those workflows? Most likely there will be a sign-off in one or several places there. And you can do that in a very, in an intelligent way, so that you are only having a sign-off workflow where it's really needed, and you can have several, you know, escalations of that, you know, and so forth. So you can build a system around this, and what you then end up with is that you can have a creative leader who's actually looking at the details of what goes out the door and can set vision for what excellence looks like, but doesn't have to micromanage the whole thing. So you can actually have autonomy in the team. So it is possible to do this. And also, if there's a bit of a cadence approach where you as a manager would be looking close at things at a certain frequency, but not all the time. You know, when there's some kind of system like that, you kind of not breathing down the neck of everyone every single day, and that just makes everyone, you know, more happy. So there's this clearly a way to do to both, you know, be very concerned about the details or the quality of what you're doing without micromanaging the shit out of it. And we have the challenge every day in game development. So with kind of setting the stage like that, I would love to kind of get your take on this.
So, man, what was interesting to me is, and I don't think it was surprising, two things were posited as approaches a CEO could take: founder's mode and manager mode. And almost immediately, a lot of people stuck these on two opposite ends of a spectrum. We don't actually know what that spectrum is because neither term is well-defined. And then people said, you should probably be somewhere in the middle. And we don't know what means to be in the middle because we don't know what the spectrum is because we don't actually know exactly what manager mode is. Apparently the person who is hiring smart people and getting out of their way. And founder's mode is the person who's staying heavily involved. So hiring smart people and then getting in their way. None of this was clear. I loved what you said, actually. You called it out, like, how do you put yourself as the CEO of the company, founder or otherwise, in a place where you are making sure that the vision is shared across the organization? When I hear somebody take a truism, like hire smart people and get out of their way, and actually go like, got it, that's what I'll do, I'm like, wait, what? Whoa, slow down. That's a truism. Yes, there's gold nuggets in there. It's also a dramatically simplified view of the world. You need to actually understand what you're trying to do as an organization. If you're in that position, it means you've scaled. Okay, cool. Well, if you've scaled in game development, you've scaled in an environment that has high complexity and a lot of unknowns and uncertainty. In those environments, you need people who can make decisions at a local level. How are you going to make sure that the decisions that they make are good decisions? To do that, you need to know where they're trying to go. Not where you're trying to go, where they're trying to go. Because you can't evaluate somebody's decisions if you're not sure what they're trying to do. Then the next question becomes, how do I make where they're trying to go where I'm trying to go? So now I can evaluate how well things are going by my view of where I want things to go. And then the decisions that people are making against that. And all of that's to say that what I saw lacking in the article, even as I liked some of the ideas of the founder's mode, and there's a particular example I can talk about in a second. I didn't see people talking about vision. And it seemed like when people went into manager mode, they abandoned the vision or they handed over responsibility to the vision to these managers. And I'm like, no. That's not your job as CEO. You do not hand over responsibility for the vision to other people. You don't hire smart people and get out of their way in an absolute sense. What you do is you hire hopefully moral competent people, you align them to where you're trying to go, and then you trust them to move in the right direction while watching what they do in case they don't. And it's like, well, that's not as pithy as hire smart people and get out of their way. And it's like, I know. That's because reality isn't pithy. It's nuanced and complicated and real and hard. And especially when you get up to those senior leadership layers. And then you switch it over to like, well, what is the founder doing? Well, you know, again, everybody took it as like license to micromanage. It's like, no, stop. Founder's mode isn't licensed to micromanage. It's to go, look, there's some things about this product which again, if I'm in a company where I'm having this conversation, we've scaled to the point where I can't micromanage anything. Because as you called out, if you've only got five people, there may be one creative lead of some kind who is just in everything all the time. And their job is just to walk around and make sure everything is aligning to that vision. The problem with that person is when they don't adjust as the company scales, like you said, they burn out. They become the bottleneck because they never figured out how to communicate the vision to others so that anybody else could hold it. And that's really, really hard to do. So I understand why they get stuck. But if so, if you can't figure out how to communicate your vision to others, then you shouldn't scale. Now, if you've scaled, you're already past the point where you get to say like, well, do I get to micromanage everything? The answer is no. Why? Because you can't. There's too much happening much sooner than you'd think. There's too much going on for you to manage all the details. But if there is some, if everybody's doing something, your job is now to align all of them to a vision. This is where we're trying to go as CEO or founder, or whoever you are, right? Like in founder's mode land. And then you get to pick a couple of things to be highly engaged with because you consider them the most important things for the achieving of that vision. So I was talking to some folks over at Larian Studios who developed Baldur's Gate 3, and they were talking about their CEO, Sven. And they were talking about how Sven, he was kind of in everything, but everybody had massive autonomy. And so Sven was like striking this balance between this person who had defined what he was looking for and was always trying to be sort of the first player to ever play the game. Every time he sat down to play it, they said that it was just amazing. He could like put on this like, okay, I've never played this game before. And that's who he would become. And then he would play the game and he would tell you like, this is what the player is going to experience. And he was right. Yeah, he was really good at that. He was really good at just sort of blanking his mind, even though he'd played the game thousands of times in all different iterations up to that point. He had a vision for what he wanted the game to be, and he had an understanding of who the player was. And those were really important things if you're the vision holder, whether you're the CEO or the founder. Do you know who your audience is, and do you know the vision that you have for how you're going to impact them? And he held that, and he communicated that. I was talking to a producer and an animation director, and they were both part of the Cinemax and worldbuilding space. And they said, we knew where he was trying to go. That means that Sven was successful, because Baldur's Gate scaled up to, I think, 400 or 500 people. I think it was 450 or something like that. He could not be in everybody's business. It's not possible. There's not enough time in the day. Or if he tried to be, he was going to slow everything down. He created a vision and these guiding principles that everybody could know and understand. And then they had the autonomy to act inside of that. And now when he was injecting himself in, it wasn't to micromanage, it was to, well, maybe sometimes it was, but it was to go in and say like, hey, is this thing aligned to the vision? Hey, are we following the principles? Hey, are we following where we're trying to go? And I loved it because, you know, again, if you simplify it down, I could make an argument that Sven was a pure vision leader who stayed abstracted and just set goals and culture and backed away, right? But that wasn't true. You could also make the argument that like, well, Sven was in all the business and he was making sure and he was being the creative auteur who, you know, made sure every little piece and jot and tittle was all just correct and perfect. No, he wasn't doing that either. He was blending both and he was being strategic in where he was deciding to get involved and where he was not getting involved. And that, this is where I didn't like the simplicity of the founder's mode on one end, manager's mode on the other, and some sort of spectrum in between. And then, like you said, everybody's like, oh, you should be in the middle. I'm like, well, of course you should. You just made up a bunch of nonsense. You didn't actually define any of what these things mean. That you are there to try to set up that whole organization to succeed and then to make decisions about where you inject yourself. And you're going to make mistakes and the organization, the product is going to pay the consequence of that. But learn and get better at it over time and figure it out. And you want, and if you have an environment where nobody else needs autonomy, you can just founder's mode all day. It probably means you're in a relatively simple space trying to do something relatively simple. And now you just need to direct everybody all the time. And maybe the work to be done is simple work. You know, like I don't want to simplify farming, but if you have a huge farm, you can say, hey, X person who works for me on staff, I need you to hop in the tractor and you're going to mow field 2 for the next 3 days because it's a really big field. Well, are you micromanaging? Well, you're telling him exactly what he's going to be doing for the next 3 days, which is mowing field two. But like, I don't, no one considers that micromanagement. It's like, okay, cool. My assignment as somebody who is working for a tractor driver and this farm is to mow, plow, like whatever you're doing, right? I'm going to run this tractor over this entire field for 3 days. And you're trying to, so there's an environment where something like you have a simple goal, you don't need a ton of autonomy, you can just direct everybody. Game development, software development doesn't look like that. Now that guy, while he's out there driving, he might need to figure out how to navigate around things. He's got some complexities he needs to figure out. He's going to do that on his own. In game development, we have a lot of unknowns, a lot of complexity, a lot of things you're going to discover. And so I'm being a little bit critical of this because I feel like people jumped to a bunch of conclusions around it, like I said, and they didn't really understand or define what they were talking about. And I feel like vision was absent. And so, you know, someone might say like, oh, okay, so Ben, you're saying like, it's both, it's manager mode and vision mode. I'm like, no, it's, you establish the vision and then your job is to ensure that culturally from a product perspective and as an organization, you are continuing to align to that vision over time. You're injecting yourself tactically, potentially all the way down to the ground floor if you need to. But over time and as you scale, you're going to be able to do that less and less and less as an overall percentage of everything that's going on. And so much of your job needs to be looking at the big picture and establishing the big picture vision. And then you get tactical when you need to, if there's something really, really critical or essential that you need to make sure succeeds.
I think this is, you know, you made it very clear. And, you know, thanks for your take. You know, seems like they're very much aligned, you know, on this. And I have two questions to follow up on this. One comment and one question. So my comment would be, you know, you said you took this example and you know what you said here on game development, software development. I do think it applies actually everywhere. You know, marketing, operations. I mean, really everywhere. You know, I think this is highly applicable in basically any team, any organization. My question is this: to kind of, you know, let's wrap this up, you know, by just taking the next level. So when we talk about vision here, because I think you're absolutely right on about that point, and you know, maybe you can spin on that example, you know, with Sven that I thought was very telling. When we talk about vision, I think it's common that we, you know, what we see in front of us is a, you know, some kind of vision document. You know, we see a leader on stage, explaining it, an exciting vision in a charismatic way. But I guess it can also be by example, because
has to be by example. Has to be. Yeah.
That's a good point. And we might be saying that for two different reasons. The reason I was thinking it right now is that sometimes someone who has a very clear vision might not be able to express it in that form. You know, might not be able to express it on that stage or in that
as a PowerPoint in front of the whole company.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
However, might be, I'm kind of seeing Svent in front of me here, right? You know, might have an amazing, you know, calibrated taste for, you know, when, you know, playing, you know, that iteration of the game, you know, what's right, what's wrong, what do we need, you know, but might not 100% be able to explain why, but the vision alignment might be, you know, correct, and the guidance might be correct. So, okay, so can you just elaborate slightly on you know, why it has to be by example? And then my final thing on that would be, does that mean that you could actually have an expectation on your team, if you have a, you know, well-gelled team, that you could even ask them, you know, don't look at that document. What does your gut tell you?
So that's where you want to get to. The document should always live though. Okay. So you have a vision. Now, the vision is multifaceted. There's a vision for the product or game. There's going to be a vision for the culture and the organization. You could subdivide that a lot of different ways. You know, I have the three-layer model that I want leaders to be thinking about of culture, product, process. You need to have a vision as a leader for all three of those things. Now,
sometimes we might be putting a vision deck for what our product is or the feature is or the game is or whatever it is, you know, and you need somebody who can try to do that as well as we can so we can communicate it, but it's never going to be sufficient. Your objective is to achieve alignment to those sets of visions, those sets of goals that you have as an organization. As the CEO, you're kind of holding all of them simultaneously. And as you're, it's really, really hard to do that. As I mean, you're a CEO, right? Like, you know this. You've been the founder of a company. You're trying to balance, like, okay, wait, I've got to think about the product, but I've also got to think about the culture, but I've also got to think about, you know, and there's like hiring and how does HR work and like what's the process and how do I do this all well simultaneously? You can't do it all yourself. So you communicate out. But when you're doing anything, the reason I say that you have to do it by example, when you're the senior leader of an organization, everybody's watching everything you do. What you do will impact how people behave more than what you say or what you put on a slide deck. So that example of like Sven watching the playtest and kind of, or like participating in the playtest, actually, even better, right? Participating in a playtest and going like, wait, hang on, that thing's not right. It should be more like this. You might've had some huge slide deck that everybody's already seen that explained the thing you just said. But when you set it in context, it means more. Because now people have the example to go with, the example of you identifying it, but also the example of the game. And you can do that, again, culturally, you do that with product, you do that with process. All of those layers are engaged all the time and everybody's watching you. And what you do, how you behave, and how other leaders in your organization, this is where I didn't like the like, hire smart people and get out of their way. Wait a minute, you need to make sure that they're culturally aligned with what you believe the company should become. Because if they're not, they're going to start fracturing your culture. And you see this a lot in organizations where they hire smart people who have experience. And the phrase I hate that I never want to hear a company say is like, well, we need to mature the organization. What does that mean? What do you mean when you say we need to mature the organization? Well, we need to stop using these simple tools and we need to go to the advanced expensive ones. We need to have a big HR department and a much stronger legal presence. I'm like, our brand needs to be, why? Because we're maturing as an organization. We need rules about who gets promoted and who doesn't. Like, wait, stop. You're the founder. You're establishing the vision for what this company should be. You're leading by example as you do that. You're hiring other people in and then you're training them to do that. Now, the other thing I wanted to say related to what you were saying, if I'm Sven, again, I like using Sven as an example because I think it was such a positive story for me. So way to go, Sven. I think you crushed it. Baldur's Gate 3 was awesome. If you're Sven and you are playing that game and you're seeing like, wait, it's not like this, it's like that. And you're saying that, people see that, they observe it. But you're also, part of your responsibility as the person holding the vision is to go, what did I just do? Why? Because you said like not everybody can articulate that vision in the PowerPoint deck. You need to either figure out how to do that or know somebody who's going to help you do that. So that when you bump into those things, you go, okay, cool. I found a specific instance where we went too grim dark and not enough fantasy. And that's what I need to figure out how to communicate. How do I target in? I'm going to work with some people to put together a slide deck where it's like, look, we don't want this. This went too grim dark, not enough sort of high fantasy. We need to pull that back a little bit for where this game is at. Cool. I can message that out. And your job is to figure out how to articulate. Like, this is one of the things as a CEO, as a founder, your job is to be able to, or your job is to somehow go, this is the vision I have in my head. I have to figure out how to get it to other people. Because if I don't, as the company scales or grows, or as time goes on, entropy rules the day. Alignment will decay. You will lose over time if you are not constantly course correcting the culture, the product, and the process. And to do that, again, you can't understand whether someone's making good decisions or bad in the absence of a vision of understanding where they're going. You have to be looking at all three of those layers, and then you have to be going, okay, cool, how do I course correct this organization every day through my own example, through messaging, through every conversation I have, to point people where I want them to be looking. Now, you might still get it wrong and your company might totally fail and you might scale and blow up and it'd be a disaster. I that's the whole thing too, where all of this like, you know, survivorship bias comes into play here a lot. But the key thing is you have to have your vision. You have to be getting that out in all those layers and through example, through conversation, through presentation, in all the ways you can. And that's your job, whether you have five people. When you have five people, you're doing that. It's just that you have the time and space to do it in a more direct, tactical way. And when you have 1,000 people, you're doing that. And now it has to be somewhat like a lot more distributed, and you don't get to get into the weeds barely at all. So anyway, there you go. There's my rant.
I love that rant. That was a rant that I wish we would have seen, the last few weeks, with all the buzz around this.
I hope you liked that interview. If you did, you know what to do. Share it on your favorite social media so others can learn from the Favro community.